This past Monday, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that many of the elements of the President Trump's travel ban on individuals from six Muslim nations could be implemented, pending a later review of the president's executive order by the court. This past Thursday evening, those policies were indeed installed. Our first guest today joins us to discuss the potential impact of this, I guess you'd call it, addition as well as a pause to immigration policy, as it applies to individuals in New Jersey as well as obviously elsewhere. She's an immigration law counsel with the firm Mandelbaum, Salzburg in Roseland, New Jersey. Lori Wogue, thanks for being here today, Lori.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And to learn more about the services provided by the law firm of Mandelbaum, Salzburg, it is lawfirm.ms. And we have a link over at our website. So as I said in the introduction, Lori, this is not necessarily a full-out change in immigration laws. It's, as really the president said during the campaign, we have a broken immigration system where, though there are albeit very few that seep through the cracks, maybe most notably one of the shooters in San Bernardino who flat out lied on her application as a refugee, and the system needs to be fixed. The only way you do that is you turn off the water, just as you would with a pipe. And through your experience and your knowledge of what these pauses and changes are, what is your analysis of all this?
Are you asking me about my analysis of the recent court decision?
Exactly,
or the
yes.
ban in general?
The court decision.
Okay. Well, my impression of the court decision is that the court is, of course, as you know, saying that they are going to visit the full issues in October, but unlike the lower courts, they are allowing some of the ban to proceed as directed. So, but they provided a little bit more direction as to how they would like to see it implemented. For example, saying that certain people from the affected countries, the six country majority Muslim countries that are listed in the ban, will be allowed to enter if they can demonstrate a bona fide relationship with an entity or relative in the United States. So I think the question going forward is, well, there are two things I'm looking at. One is the fact that the court apparently felt implicitly that the potential harm from a possible constitutional issue, that is the First Amendment issue of whether there's an unlawful establishment of religion or discriminatory religious animus in the ban. They apparently didn't feel that that was critical enough at this stage to continue the injunctions that the lower courts had issued. The other thing I think that we'll be looking at going forward is how are the consulates and embassies around the world going to interpret that phrase of a bona fide relationship.
And as we came to learn, too, just over from Monday through Thursday, even the administration had second thoughts and reconsideration of fiancés.
That is correct. What they did, similar to what they've done in the past when they've issued these orders, is to go back and say, well, maybe we didn't mean that, we mean this. There's some retooling going on. And so in this case, they're allowing people who have, it's called a K-1 visa, fiancé visa, to enter the U.S., whereas initially the State Department guidance didn't mention that particular category. They have issued some guidance on who qualifies as a close family relative. Some people might say these distinctions are going to be a little bit arbitrary in practice. For example, in addition to fiancés, originally, so I'm just looking at my notes, they have said that somebody who is a grandparent doesn't have the requisite family relationship, but a parent-in-law, an in-law would be okay, a brother-in-law would not. So arguably there might be some litigation around these decisions overseas because particular individuals might in fact have a closer family tie to a grandparent here than they would to a category that's allowed.
And for your edification listening, the six countries are Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen. And you know, quite frankly, if the administration want to be consistent, Saudi Arabia should have been included on that list. But for obvious political reasons, that was not going to happen. And most people say that this is really going to be the heaviest impact over the next 120 days. It's 90 days for immigrants, 120-day pause for refugees.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The refugee classification is going to be more impacted by this. Is that going to be more so on the American side for vetting or on the side of the country of origin for, well, many say even flat-out lack of proof of identity and documents in some cases?
Well, I think that's a really good question. I think that you're right that we are going to see an impact on the refugee program here. I don't personally know what the administration is contemplating in terms of its so-called review that they want to institute, and as far as we know, haven't really instituted yet in terms of the procedures that they would like to see improved. What they've said before is that they wanted this pause in order to review, have other countries review their procedures about who is who and why they're coming, et cetera, not necessarily our procedures. Refugees arguably have already gone through some of the most intense vetting before they are allowed to come here. So, again, I think you might have some questions or litigation arising around this issue. Why is somebody allowed to come visit temporarily as a tourist, let's say, to visit an in-law, but someone who's been uprooted and persecuted in their country of origin and has been waiting in a refugee camp for several years isn't allowed to come when they may have what could be considered a bona fide relationship with a resettlement agency? In other words, there are entities in the U.S. that have worked with these people, are finding them places to live, et cetera. So I think there are definitely going to be some questions around that area, and not sure what's going to happen there over the next 120 days or so.
Talking with Immigration Law Counsel Lori Wogue with Mandelbaum Salzburg, lawfirm.ms is their website, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. And as far as refugee influx in New Jersey, which Governor Christie had said a few months ago that as far as Syrian refugees were concerned, he was not going to have New Jersey accept any, but nationally, 7,371 refugees entered the U.S. in the month of December 2016. That has dropped now to 3,989, and the last numbers were from May. And in New Jersey, last year, 601 refugees resettled in New Jersey, and so far this year, 202. Through your work with immigration law, and I mean, we always hear the debate one side versus the other, but just legally speaking versus other forms of, you know, comparing the amount of red tape and procedures and policies for an immigrant versus someone opening a business, just picking a compare and contrast, how heavy-handed or how fine-tooth-combed is the immigration process legally?
Well, it's kind of a broad question. I would try to answer it by saying it's a very complex system. Most people, there are certainly aspects of it that are simpler than others. Most people who are trying to open a business here have very few ways in which they can do that legally. There are some avenues for gaining permanent residence through skills, through needed jobs, through entrepreneurship, but they are limited. There are many, many criteria. It takes a long time. As you just mentioned, the refugee process is very difficult. Coming through a family relationship can be a little bit simpler, but again, they all take time. They all involve some understanding of the law, the ability to fill out forms. So it is quite a difficult process. There's been a lot of talk lately about possibly moving to a more merit-based system or something based on points like Canada's. It seems to me that the time would be ripe for some type of immigration reform in order to streamline the process and help us fill needed jobs in the United States.
And that point system, you know, much like when you go get your license or registration renewed, would maybe help overcome the, as referenced before, some countries of origin where many of these people come over free of any legitimate documents or forms of ID.
Not really sure I understand that question. Sorry.
No, I was just saying how a point system or a merit system would help overcome any immigrant or refugee coming from a country who was lacking proper identification, where they can have the proof of showing why they're here
I see what you're saying. Well, it would, but that already should exist to some extent. When we have the Department of State, its consulates and embassies overseas, when they interview people who would like to come here for a specific reason, particularly from the countries that don't have what we call visa waiver, where they're allowed to come without a visa. So, of course, these six countries, people would always need a visa to come even as a tourist. The embassies and consulates have staff that are supposed to review the legitimacy of those applications. So they should be looking for whatever claimed ties there are. Is this person who he or she says he or she is, doing a background check, et cetera? So, and there isn't always a much reviewability or ability to appeal those negative decisions.
Just to wrap things up, as far as what you'll be looking at and watching for, especially for here in New Jersey, because we have various medical centers, mm-hmm. academic conferences, and the pharmaceutical industry, just to name a few instances, to be determined, granted, because we're only in like the first, literally the first days of this pause, but there could be an impact for those, someone from Syria, for example, who was looking for medical care only available at University Hospital in Newark, for example.
Well, exactly. I was going to bring that up as a potential area that could be difficult or confusing to implement, where we could see some problems. There are some things that are a little bit clear from the State Department guidance. The agency guidances in Washington, Homeland Security, but there are other things that aren't. We're going to have to see how they play out because the court's guidelines were really sort of broad. I think that even people who are supposed to be able to come, if they have been invited to give a lecture or a conference, something like that, it may be that the posts around the world are going to be making different types of decisions based on differing amounts of information or lack of guidance that they get. So there may be some confusion. What you mentioned is also something I've been thinking about. Somebody who's coming here, let's say, looking for medical care for a type of operation or treatment they can't get in their home country. How is that going to be treated? Will our hospitals be impacted? We don't know.
As they say, to be determined. The wishful thinking is that the system will indeed be fine-tuned. And after the 90/120 days for the two classifications, all could be improved.
Yes, it is early. We'll have to see how things play out. Another interesting question, though, is what is going to happen in October when the court does hear the full case? Will these issues be moot in some respect? What happens if the 90 days have run and the administration has not reviewed the policies, or they want to extend the ban or institute a revised ban? What's going to happen then? So I think these are open questions. We're going to have to see what happens and watch the issues very carefully.
And others are saying, too, this was the Supreme Court punting while still making a ruling, which was a novel concept when you think about that.
Perhaps. I think they punted a little bit.
Learn more about the services provided by Mandelbaum Salzberg Law Firm and Roseland. Lawfirm.ms is their website. We've been joined by their immigration law counsel, Lori Wogue. Lori, thanks for being here today.
Thank you so much.